It's my pleasure to introduce you all to the amazing Dashanaba King. If we're going to address you correctly, Dash, it's Dr. King.
They all work.
They all work. Oh, very good. Very good. Just wanted to check something, Dash. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Fantastic. We can hear you. That's brilliant.
Very good.
So behind this cool, calm, very pretty exterior, there is a very deep history of many different things. And the thing that really, really, as a sports fan, that really, really interested me and I can't wait to hear about, so I'm going to jump straight in with this, was your involvement in the Rumble in the Jungle, Mr. Foreman and Mr. Ali. And I've seen a few photos as well. He looks glamorous, Dash. He looked glamorous.
Thank you for that.
It's no problem.
But the year was 74, the fall of 1974, in fact. It was a beautiful California day. I was living in Hollywood. And on this particular day, I had had a tooth extraction that week. So my jaw was very swollen. And I was just chilling, because you know, with when you've had a tooth extraction, there's not very much you can do, is it?
No.
You know, so I was just kind of there chilling, listening to the radio, and I heard this ad on the radio about Muhammad Ali and George Foreman being in town at the Century Plaza Hotel. And they were gonna be having a contest for Miss Foreman, Miss Ali. And they told the women to come on down and join in and enter the contest. If you can meet the rules, they said, bring a swimsuit, bring an evening gown, be prepared to perform in front of the judges and ask questions. So I'm laying there, not feeling so hot, with a big jaw. And I decided, what the hell, it's a beautiful day. Why don't I just go and hang out? Plus, one of my favorite people in the world, Champ, is going to be there. So I'm like, and I didn't live that far from the hotel. And I figured, okay, I could do that. So I jumped in the car, got myself ready, got a little bag with a little evening dress and a swimsuit. And by the way, the swimsuit wasn't even matching. It was the top one color and the bottom the other color. But I just threw it in the bag and I went on. When I arrived at the hotel in 1974, they wanted something like $15 to park. And that was about all I had. And they damn sure wouldn't go get it. So I had to go around the corner. I had to go take my car around the corner and park and then run back to the hotel to register before midday to be a part of this, if you will, contest. I made it. It was on the penthouse floor at the Century Plaza Hotel. And I walked in that room. Now, let me also say that in September 74, I was also entering my graduate work at UCLA. And I had decided that I wanted to study African studies because I wanted to know more about Africa. And I wanted to know more about myself and my roots, if you will. So I did my research. I had gone to undergraduate at Wayne State University, Detroit, Michigan. And I had done my research, and UCLA was the place to be. Mm. If you wanted a career in Africa, you needed to go there. So I did. And the school started in September. And so somewhere along in there, I think it was July or so, I'd heard the information on the radio. And anyway, I went for the contest on the day of the contest. And there I was. I entered this room with all of these people. Basically, the people in the room were models, and they were gorgeous. And they had nails out to here. They had lashes out to here. They had on G-straps, all right? And I'm a Christian girl and a church girl, so I don't be in worlds like that. You know, all of these women are barely naked. Tons of them, beautiful as they could be, all of them with their portfolios. And I'm looking at the portfolios. Wow. You know, that kind of thing. I didn't have one. I didn't even know I was supposed to have one, right? So at some point, they organized us into groups to begin to present ourselves to be a part of this contest. And they told us that the winners would get to go to Africa. Well, that's why I wanted to go up there to the Century Plaza Hotel, because it would give me a chance to go to Africa. I mean, I could win a trip to Africa. Why not? So, and inside of me, how was I feeling? I was feeling that I can do this. I can do this. So, but I didn't know what it called for. Now, I've never entered a contest before in my life, because I don't consider myself a beauty queen kind of thing. So I've never entered a contest. But this one, because I could win a trip to Africa and I may get to meet Ali, it was worth it. So I went there to the hotel, and everybody got a chance to do quote unquote their thing. They ask you questions. They have you to model in a swimsuit. Well, I never modeled in a swimsuit. So all I did was just mock the girls. Whatever they did, I did. You know, if they twitched their butt to the right, I twitched mine to the, you know, I didn't know. I was really in unfamiliar territory. I didn't wear nails. I didn't wear hair on my head. I didn't even wear makeup at that point in my life. Okay. So I was really like a fish out of water in this room with all of these people. But I knew two things. One, I wanted to win that trip to Africa. And two, I wanted to meet Ali. Yeah. So I did everything I thought I needed to do to win. And at some point you have to display a talent. At that point I danced professionally. So I was able to dance for my talent. And I danced to a song called Sunday and Sister Jones by Roberta Flack, okay? Who I eventually came to meet. But the song was about her husband, and they were very much in love. That morning, he passed away. By evening, she passed away because she prayed, look, she said, Lord, if you take him away, I don't want to live another day. So you took him in the morning, please take me in the evening. I just thought that was such a powerful song and such a powerful request to ask a quote unquote spirit. So anyway, I had composed a dance to that song. So that's what I did for my talent. I think where I won the contest, Dave, is when they started asking about Africa. Mm-hmm. All right. Because I was a student of African studies. I was studying Africa. I was learning about the African presidents and their relationship with the American government and so on and so forth. So when they asked the question, do you think the fight should be in Africa and why? Well, I was able to say why.
Yeah.
You know, you're building bridges. Okay, you're getting Africans coming to America, you're getting Americans going to Africa, right? And I just had, and then I talked about Mobutu and his policies with America. And this is what you learn when you're in school. So I was able to just talk it. The other girls basically, you know, I won those kind of conversations hands down.
Brilliant.
So at some point after we had finished with all of the dancing and the going before the judges and so on and so forth, then we had to wait for the decision on who would win. So I'm still just floating around the room, enjoying myself, looking at all of these beautiful people and wondering how did they do that or how did they make their hair look like that? Anyway, it was amazing for me to be in the room. Even though I was living in Hollywood, I was still very much a church girl and preparing to go to the university for my graduate work. So when they started calling the winners, they always start with number four and come up to number one. So when they got to number one and they called my name, everybody was looking around to see, well, who was this? And I was scared to raise my hand because I was in unfamiliar territory. And finally, I kind of raised my hand, you know, they said, oh. And you come up to the front, and then they tell you you're the winner. And then they tell you that evening you're going to get a chance to meet Ali. Well, as you well know, that was one of the things I wanted to do.
Sure.
All right. Even though I still had a big jaw, my jaw was still swollen from the tooth being extracted. So I went home and got dressed and came back in the evening. It was a huge dinner affair. Couldn't eat a thing because of the swollen jaw.
Yeah, of course.
And all I could do was sip through a straw. So I was able to sip wet stuff. Long story short, so anyway, that night we did get to meet both Ali and George. And we met George first. Mm. You know, we were all excited and hello. And then we met Ali and we were still all excited. I mean, it was a big dinner affair. I didn't realize it, but I was one of the guests of honor because I was the number one winner. So the winner, and we had like three other girls in the court of the winners. I have to speak on this one because one of those girls is a girl by the name of Veronica Porsche, who Ali eventually married. Really? But she was one of the alternates, okay? So from the winning that Saturday at Century Plaza Hotel, I got a chance to call my family in New York and tell them, but I didn't have to call and tell them. It was all over the news by now. Mm. And my dad saw me standing in a swimsuit in public. So boy, did I get a lashing of the tongue. You can't do that. But my mother was there to save me to some degree. And she did. She saved me and she kept him away from the TV. I mean, we didn't go around in the swimsuits all of the time, but some of the time when the cameramen were filming, we were in those swimsuits. And that's what they flashed on the news. And that's what my dad saw, you know, kind of thing. So that was kind of scary because I didn't know how to be with that with dad. So from that event that night, from that day, it just went forward, 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 all kinds of things to do. We were invited to travel to different cities to talk about the fight, to talk about the fighters themselves, to talk about the country. And I think that I won, this is just my own interpretation. I think I won that contest because I probably knew more about Africa than the other women in the room.
That makes sense. Well. Incredible.
Okay. I don't think it was because I was a knockout beauty, because Veronica, remember now, Veronica, the girl Ali eventually married, was one of the women in the contest. Mm-hmm. So they had what people like to call beauty. Real beauty. And I didn't see myself in that light. Also, the winners that they wound up picking were like from as dark skin complexion as me, as light skin to Veronica, and Veronica could pass for white if she chose to. So they had, as they call those, women from the flower garden. Okay. Different shades of colors of women.
Yeah.
Eventually it was time. So we did a lot of travel and a lot of talking about the fight, and I handled that well because I am a talker and I knew something about Africa. Mm. So they wanted me to do that. Mm-hmm. So from there, eventually it was time to board the flight and go to New York to board the plane to take us to Kinshasa. So by the time we got to New York, my family was living in New York. They all met us at the airport. So that was all nice and sweet to be with your mom and dad and sisters and brothers and relatives and all of these stars and what have you. It was just an exciting time for me. Mm-hmm. So eventually it was, and that picture I sent you, Dave, I was going through my computer before it started acting funny. And I saw it and I thought, well, this is the day we left America to travel on the plane to Kinshasa.
Wow.
And because we were the women who were the what they call us, the poster girls, we were taking a picture with James Brown. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was what that picture was about that I sent you. So yeah, we went on the plane. It was seems like the flight was like 20 hours or more. It was very long. It was a, how do you call it? It wasn't a regular flight. It was a flight only for this group, a chartered flight, I should say.
Yeah.
So everybody on the plane was on. We were all going to the same place, which was Kinshasa, for the Rumble in the Jungle. And all of the every entertainer that you've seen listed was on the plane. We were all on the flight together.
Let's just
and we had a great time.
Let's just run through that list then, Dash. Let's run through that list, because I've seen it, and George and Mark and Sarah haven't. So you've mentioned James Brown.
Yeah, on the plane coming to Kinshasa for a 3-day concert. Now, let me back up and give you a little history on the fight itself.
Okay.
Don King was the main promoter of the fight.
Yep.
And he was looking around for funding, but he couldn't find anybody. And so for whatever reason, he decided to approach President Mobutu Sese Seko. And President Mobutu decided to take the deal and pay, because he wanted to create a better name for Kinshasa Zaire. He had done some horrible things, and he was trying to maybe make a name for himself, or get people to look at him differently. So he agreed to do the fight, and it would give him international appeal, which it did, of course. So that's the background of what happened, that Mobutu is the one who came forward with the money to Don to host the show in Kinshasa.
Right.
All right. And they were billing it as the Rumble in the Jungle, but they were also looking at it as a time for African Americans and Africans to come together for racial healing and cultural healing. This is back in 74, because Mobutu, how can I say this? He was a ruthless leader.
Okay.
I'll just leave it at that.
I get you.
And so he was looking to shed some light on his country and himself and make himself look better. So he took the deal from Don to pay for the fight. So we came in on that huge plane. I know we left out of JFK. I'm not exactly sure of the airline, but I think it was a Pan Am back at that time. A Pan Am flight, which don't exist today, right?
Right.
Pan American. So as we were maybe an hour or 2 hours away from landing in Zaire, the people on the plane was like, oh, you know, they speak a different language. How do we say hello and stuff like that? Well, being a student of African studies at UCLA, top university in the country, I could speak a little Kiswahili.
All right.
So I was able to teach the people how to say, hello, how are you? My name is. Mm-hmm. So literally, I went to the plane working with people to teach them how to say, Hujambo mama, which means, how are you?
Okay.
And the answer, Sikitu. So I taught them how to say, Hujambo mama. And you could answer Sikitu, Salama, like that. Now, when I get to James Brown, and they had somehow decided that he would be the first one off the plane, he said, I really want to greet the people. So I taught him how to greet the people plurally. Hum jumbo, Habibi, is singular. Hello to you, Dave. Okay. But when you're doing it plural, it's hum jumbo, my Bibi's number one. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, like that. So the plane landed, the doors open, everybody was excited. James led the way, and the door opened. He stepped off the plane, and he said, "Hum jumbo, my BB's the Mabwana." And he gave him that James Brown scream, and we didn't know it. But on the field, we saw people, but we didn't really know. But what had happened, they must have had about 200 dancers at the airport to meet us.
Right.
And those dancers started dancing. And the drums. It's just so much excitement. So he came down. Who else was on? George and Ali were already there. They had been training. So then people like B.B. King, Bill Withers, the Pointer Sisters, the Brother Johnson. Who else was there? Performers. Oh. Who also was on the plane was Hugh Masekela,
okay,
Kaifa Sebenya, Leta Mbulu. And I know these artists because I used to work in the entertainment industry. Okay. And I actually worked for their manager. So a lot of those artists on the plane were people I knew while I was a student in school working okay, yeah. Working and going to school at the same time. And I worked for a man by the name of John Levy, L-E-V-Y, a black man with the name John Levy, all right? And he used to book the entertainers to perform at the clubs and things like that. That was his business. He was a booking agent. Mm. And he taught me about how to do that, okay? Oh, but anyway, back to the story. So we've landed in Kinshasa. It's all of these dancers just frantically dancing. And we're just big-eyed and having fun and coming down and greeting people and meeting people and like that. So I don't even remember when I got off the plane, but obviously I did. Okay. Got the cards and they took us to hotel. I think it was called Hotel Intercontinental at the time. And everybody had, you know, got settled into their rooms and what have you. And later on that day is when we actually went to meet George and Ali. Well, we could meet them now at the same time. Mm-hmm. Before we left America, going to Zaire, okay, we were promoting the fight in various countries. And I'm sorry, in various cities. And sometimes Ali or George would show up at some of those events to help promote it. Mm-hmm. All right. I remember one place we were in, I think Oregon or somewhere like that. Mm-hmm. And both Ali and George were there. And they asked them to go in the ring. And for whatever reason, a fight broke out. In the ring with these two guys. And so me and all the girls, the winners, the poster girls, we were frantic. Oh my God, they're fighting. So we were crying up a storm. We were upset. We were angry. They took us in a back room trying to calm us down. We didn't know what was going on. We were scared they were going to hurt each other. And a guy by the name of Boudini, who was like Ali's alter ego, if you will.
Okay.
Came in the room and he told us, ladies, it wasn't real.
Okay.
And we didn't believe it. We didn't believe it. Mm. We didn't say it wasn't real. But then another guy came by the name of Lloyd Price, who I understand was called the Velvet Man because he had a beautiful voice. He was a little bit before my time, so I didn't really know of him as a singer. But Lloyd Price came, and he and his wife, and they came and sat and talked to us and told us that that had been staged. And they had done that to create excitement, right, for the fight. So eventually we had to accept it. We didn't believe it, but eventually we had to accept it because they kept saying, no, it was staged.
Right.
And they weren't going to hurt each other. Everything's okay. But some of us still couldn't believe it. It didn't look staged, you know? Mm. So anyway, there we are in our room with Boudini was there. And like I said, Lloyd Price and his wife, I forget her name, were there. And Ali comes in the room. And they told him how upset we were and we were scared. So he came to tell us he was sorry. Right. That he did want to beat George up. But he wasn't going to beat him up till he got to Zaire. So he told us it really was okay, yeah. You know. And by now, it's like we're like in a room, in one little room, and here's Ali, and you get to see how big he really is. And I remember looking at his arm, and I asked him if I could touch him. And he said, yeah, it's real. And he let me touch him, touch his arm, because it was too big to be real. And from there, he said, okay, after you guys have dinner, you're going to have dessert with me. All right. So after we had dinner at the hotel that night, we were invited up to his suite and we sat around and just got a chance to talk to the champ and ask him questions about whatever. Yeah. And that's when I learned that he loves ice cream. They have to keep it away from him because he loves ice cream. And the second thing he loves is a thing called women. So they said, okay, girls, it's time for y'all to leave the room.
Well, at least me and Muhammad Ali have got two things in common then.
All right. So from there were other bouts and other things that they did to promote it. But now here we are, fast forwarding back to being in Zaire at the hotel and all of the promotions that were going on locally. It was just a few days before the fight would take place. They had a 3-day musical concert with all of these geniuses there. It was a huge, huge, huge stadium. And there was a big, big picture of the president, Mobutu, in the stadium. I don't know. I'm going to say that poster was probably 20 or 30 feet tall. Goodness. It was a huge picture of Mobutu there in the stadium, kind of thing. So I remember being there. I remember having lots of fun. I remember there are some people in Kinshasa who do speak Kiswahili. So I was able to have a conversation with a few people.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And every day was an enjoyable day. Every day was an enjoyable day. So some days we go spend, we meaning me and the poster girls, we go spend the day in George's room. And then we do whatever George was up to that day. Mm. And then other days we would spend in Ali's camp. Okay. Yep. George actually stayed at the hotel. Ali stayed somewhere else.
Mm.
Okay. And so we got to every day hang out, do stuff, eat, talk, understand. And I can remember personally myself, many conversations is asking him things about himself because I had read about him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there he was live in person to answer some of those questions for me, which he did. So now here comes the day of the big fight. Before the fight occurred, while they were, every day the guys were in training. Some days, like I say, you're with Ali in his camp. Other days with George in his camp. And then the third day, you would be with the media people. They would take you out into the city, to the radio stations, to the malls, to the schools, whatever, to promote the fight. So that's kind of like what we were doing while we were there. And as the poster girls, we always had to go dressed up and so on and so forth. So now on one day during George's training, he got injured. And they literally had to postpone the fight from the day they were expecting to a later date. It was a September date and they finally had it, but they had to change the date for about, I don't know, 6 weeks, 8 weeks until George was healed up, until they could actually do the real fight.
Okay?
Oh, wow. I will also go back and say this. Here's one thing that I do remember doing training. Sometimes when Ali was in training, and you know how you go off to the side and you spit, he would spit blood.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. In 74.
Right.
So damage had been done already, but I wasn't looking at that. Probably nobody else was either.
Mm.
But in 74, Champ was spitting blood, I will tell you that.
Right. Wow.
So, yeah. And I'm not saying every spit was blood, but I know that I saw some blood because I remember getting a tissue and handing it to him.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So that was a little bit upsetting, but not like crazy upsetting. Because he had all the handlers, he had the doctors, he had everything he needed, you know, to be in that environment. So the day of the fight eventually came around and, I have to tell you something else. By now, there were ring girls, you know, the girls in the ring who carry the cards.
Yep. Yep.
That was my doing from the time I spent working with Don, because I used to have to convince Don to let us in, you know, to let us do something. You know, and so the girls, it became cute for the girls to carry the rounds with us in their swimsuits, walking around the ring.
Yeah.
They added another feature. So that was nice. And that has now been happening forever and a day. Before that, if you go back and look at old movies, old films, you will see basically nobody was carrying the card around. But if they did, it was certainly a man.
Yeah.
Who may have been the announcer or something. So bringing the girls into carry the card was a whole new addition to the boxing world. And also a whole new set of girls for men to meet, because every girl, every round, it was a different girl carrying the round card.
Brilliant. And that was your doing then, Dashiell?
So then the fight itself did happen. And I didn't, no, I didn't. I wasn't one of the carriers. Right. I was the poster girl. Yeah. But the girls were there. They were carrying it. So after the fight happened, and as we all know, Ali went, oh, I got to back up again and tell you about Bumbaye. So the guys would go running through the community for their training every morning. And the people in the community, the kids and grown folks too, would follow behind him as he was running. He's running, he's training. And they would follow behind him.
I'll bet.
And they would say, Bumbaye, Ali, hey, Ali, you know? And so they ran through the villages too. But they didn't Bumbaye George. They Bumbaye Ali. And I have to back up again and say that Ali is probably one of the more famous people in the world. Mm. If somebody asks you if you know any famous Americans, his name will probably come out.
Yeah.
Because he was that well known. Mm. George's name, on the other hand, was not that well known. Okay. Right. But in the sporting world, everybody knew him. Yep. People were afraid that George was going to kill Ali, because they say when George hit, he hit so hard he can knock you out with one hit.
Right.
Okay. And then I've seen film where he would hit somebody like this and lift them up off the ground from here.
Wow.
So I thought George would win. Mm. Because he was just a lot more, he was way bigger than Ali, mm. okay? And it appeared to me that he was going to hurt him.
Mm.
That's what I thought. But as we all know, Ali invented in 1974 the rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
And the rope-a-dope is when he would hang out on the ropes and act like he was injured, act like he was hurt. And then George would come in. And then Ali would, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, start using those magic feet of his, right? And he was like, start stinging like a butterfly. About 30 or 50 before you could even catch your breath. And George didn't know what to do with that, and neither did we. Okay? So I would have to say, even though George was the brute and he could have beat Ali, Ali really beat him.
Yeah.
Because he outsmarted him. Okay. Yeah. He would draw George in. And after he gets in, he'd come out of nowhere and take over. So it was one of those takeover punches from Ali where George went down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then they counted him out. And then the bout was over. This thing took place at maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. Africa time, so it could be prime time in America.
Yep.
Okay. And there were so many people who came to the boxing match. In fact, it was more people on the outside trying to get in than there were people on the inside. And I'm told there were, what, 80,000-90,000 people. Wow. At the match. I think it was the biggest match in history at that point. But outside, there were more people trying to get in. So eventually, those people outside, they were pushing against the fences. And you know what happened? The fence collapsed. All those people who didn't buy a ticket came in. Okay. Wow. They came in, and I think it was Dunn and a few others who just finally said, let it go, instead of trying to take them out and make them pay or jail them or what, none of that. They said, let them stay.
Yeah. Okay,
and they did. And huge, so by the crowd. Time morning, huh?
A huge crowd.
Yeah, very huge crowd. And by the time morning began to happen, I don't know, 5 or 6 in the morning, we were called back to the hotel. They had a nice spread for us. Okay, and I did go back. I did go back, you know, to the hotel. Wow. But I was concerned about George because Ali had won.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wanted to make sure he was all right. And so when I went up to his room, it was a place I was used to going to, and I wasn't used to being told I couldn't come in. But after the fight, I was told I couldn't come in.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. And so I would go back a time or two or three. And eventually I did get in. And when I did get in the room, there were a lot of people in the room from all over the world, different cultures. They were there in George's room and in Ali's room. But how can I say it? You know how you may have some of these suites, they're very big, but there are certain sections within a suite that's still like a private room.
Yeah.
So George still had his private. It's almost like he had the whole damn floor, okay?
Yeah.
And so I remember asking if I could see him. And then they came and said, he said, you can come to see him. You can come. So when I went in the room, he had a towel over his head. So I couldn't really see his face. And I was asking him how was he doing, you know, and stuff like that. And he wasn't talking much. But he didn't want anybody to see him, even me, okay?
Mm.
So, you know, I would stay for a while. Eventually, I would go, and I would come back, and I would go, and I would come back, you know, like that. George loves dogs, and he had brought all of his big dogs with him to Kinshasa.
Right.
So when you enter the room, the first thing that you get to be introduced to is the dogs.
Okay.
They're huge, but, you know, they would keep them from hurting you. I was never hurt by any of the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
People were coming to interview George. They wanted to find out from him about the fight, but he wasn't talking.
Right.
Okay. Eventually, a few days later, he did start talking. I remember we went to play table tennis outside, and there were lots of people around, but they kept them at bay. You know, we just played inside the table tennis. So we just kind of like did what he wanted to do. We'd go walking in the morning with the dogs down by the Lubumbashi River.
Mm-hmm.
And we're told that there were alligators and crocodiles in the water, and don't get in the water.
Okay.
Okay.
Because it sounds like good advice.
Some people wanted to try the water. Okay.
Wow.
And then the next morning you see in the paper, you know, that four or five Americans have been eaten by the crocodiles because they decided to drink.
Wow. That's well, there you go. They were warned.
That could have never happened to me because I love water, but I don't like those the big animals. I don't go for that. So now here we are, the fight's over. We're still in Zaire, we're at the hotel. I will back up and say, I'm not going to say a whole lot on this one, but I will back up and say is during the time of the 6 weeks when the fight was postponed, George and I went to Paris for a week.
Nice.
Okay. That was fun. And then we came back.
I bet. There's an exclusive
and
for you.
Then we came back and we did the fight. By the time we got back to America, he and I were an item.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Ali and Veronica, even though Ali was still married to Belinda, huh?
Right.
Pardon? Did you ask me a question? Okay. So anyway, we got back to America, and I was living in California. Now I'm still that student at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, something else happened when the break got postponed. We went to Paris for a week. We came back. And then I got sent back to America because I had to now register for school because the fight was postponed.
Yeah.
And now being a later date, I was, you know, I had to go back to the States and register for school and come back, which I did.
Wow.
And I would say that was probably my 5 minutes of fame because when the plane landed in New York, my family was there, a lot of flashes and stuff. And then when we landed in Fern, I stayed in New York a few days, family. Then yeah. when we went to LA, UCLA, my university, mm-hmm. Again, when you get off the plane, it was like flash, 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 you know, it was fun. It was fun. And then by now, my picture had been on a lot of magazine covers, and I'd done a lot of interviews and la la la, and certain people were acting like I was all that. When I wasn't, it was just me.
Yeah.
And I gotten a chance to have two of my dreams come true, meet Ali and go to Africa.
Yeah.
No, so I accomplished what I went there to do, okay?
Yeah.
And it was great. And eventually got back to the States and back into the university scene and settling down, becoming a student again. But now having George and Ali in my life, which was a great thing.
Yeah.
Ali is more of a philosopher. George is more of a listener.
Okay.
He had not read the books that I had read, if you will. So we couldn't talk about them. Ali, on the other hand, he wanted to know everything going on in the world. So he had people who would read the papers and kind of tell him what was happening all over the world.
Sure.
Okay. That was something about him I liked. He wanted to know everything that was happening, and he had people to read, and they would come and tell him what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Several papers, 10, 15 papers every day.
Wow.
Then I remember at one point with me, he wanted to know how were things for me in school.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was in school on a scholarship at UCLA.
Right.
And he always would tell me, you know, he was proud of me for being in school and making it to college, and he wanted me to stay in college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't give it up. Stay in. You know, mm-hmm. and if you ever need anything, let me know.
Oh, that's good.
And I never needed anything because I was a young woman who didn't know that you were supposed to need something when a man asked you.
Right.
I didn't know that. Again, Christian upbringing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the other thing that was a big thing back then is when I would go to school sometimes in the morning, George would have the driver to take me to school in a limousine.
Nice.
So now I'm getting this reputation of this girl coming to school in a limousine. They may not have known necessarily who was in the car, right? But they knew that I had done Africa, and so it was kind of like that. I was kind of known a little bit on campus. Maybe I should say that.
So what was George Foreman like as a person then, Dash? I mean, you mentioned there that there was different.
A very sweet guy. A very sweet guy. Mm. He could talk about maybe movies. We could talk about some of that. But a lot of things we couldn't talk about because he wasn't knowledgeable on those things, let's say. I don't mean everyday news, you know, not like that.
Mm.
But he was a sweet, a big guy. He was like a big teddy bear, really.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Because
good guy. You know, believed in working out all the time, you know, taking care of his body, eating the right foods, right?
Amazing. Because I watched the highlight on YouTube. There's a really good highlights package of the fight. If you haven't got time to watch the whole fight, and mm-hmm. what you mentioned about Ali being on the ropes all the time, that's very, very obvious in watching that highlight package that was a tactic that he used. But you also mentioned that George Foreman could potentially kill somebody with one punch. Well, he was, if you watch the highlights package, he's smashing away at Ali's body. You know, punch, 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 constant round his rib cage and all of that sort of stuff.
Even more blood spitting after that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I can well believe it, because if you can punch that hard, you know, maybe kill you with one punch, imagine all of those punches going to your body. You know, I'd recommend people watch it. It's a hell of a fight.
Oh, yeah. Ali took a beating. George did hit hard.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, but then George was hurt too. They both were hurt after the fight.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you.
George was more embarrassed that he lost.
Mm, I'll bet.
He was very embarrassed that he lost.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was a guy who had many losses. He wasn't used to losing. This may have been his first one, maybe. So he took it very hard.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah, they're very proud people, aren't they, boxers?
Yeah.
Very proud people. That's really interesting. And the fact that I didn't have to say anything all the way through is even better. Just sitting back and listening to that, the whole thing. And that's almost that exclusive that you dropped in there about you were an item with George and all that sort of stuff. Fantastic. Really, really interesting. Mm. You know, really interesting. But that's not
for me. I'll go ahead.
No, carry on, Dash.
I was going to say what all of that was for me is I think at that point I got exposed to the world, if you will. Because before that, I was this young girl who used to go to church with my father, would do long speeches, and I was always into poetry and doing stuff with my father in the church. My father's a gospel singer, a minister, and I did a lot of stuff with him. So I really wasn't a girl of the world.
Mm.
But I also remember is when I won this contest as Miss Foreman, Miss Ali, the black stars in Hollywood decided, this girl is a face for us. We got to take her and get her ready.
Right.
People like Vanetta McGee, Carol Speed. These are some of the names I remember of the black star. Pam, what was her name? Pamela Greer.
Okay.
These are some of the stars back, black stars during that day. They took me to the salons to get my body waxed.
Right.
They took me to the salon to get my eyebrows arched.
Right.
And at the time I was wearing a natural, and they got my hair shaved and curved, you know, what do they call it? Just kind of made it look more professional. Because it was just wild.
Yeah.
That's another thing I forgot to say. On the day that I went for this contest, my hair was in braids. And when your hair is in braids and the braids are old, you get these little hairs just standing up, even though your hair is in braids.
Yeah.
So I took my hair down and it was nice and fluffy.
Okay.
When you take your hair out of braids, it's just nice and fluffy. So that's what the hair was looking like, you know, at the time.
Mm.
But they gave me my first set of sculptured nails.
Okay.
The Hollywood stars. They took me shopping and bought me clothing.
Right.
Because they said, you're going to be appearing on TV. And, you know, you got to have an image there. And they did what they felt they needed to do. And I loved it all. And I just felt like a doll.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you enjoy that? Absolutely brilliant. That is really, really good.
Yeah.
So you must have a lot of good memories of back then. Looking back in, when you get the chance, you know, there must be so much that keeps coming back into your mind.
Yes. I learned a lot. I got exposed to a lot. Okay.
Mm.
And what I was about to say is what it was for me. I didn't realize the magnitude of all of that, even though I was involved in it.
Mm.
Yeah. I did not. And there was no one there to necessarily say to me that you should do this or you should do that. There was a gentleman by the name of Booker Griffin, bless his soul, who was like our escort for the women who were the poster girls. Yep. Booker was our escort. And he watched us with a hawk's eye. So a lot of stuff that could have potentially happened didn't, because Booker was there.
Yep.
Okay. He was there for us. Coming back stateside, like I said, getting resettled back into being at the university and having both of these guys in my life. You know, Veronica and I were friends, so I would go visit them. Mm. And when there would be more fights in Las Vegas, living in LA, we would drive down to Vegas. But here's what happened for me. Once I came to one of those fights, and Ali asked me, how did you get here? And it was a weekday, like a Thursday night for a fight. He wanted to know, how did I get here? Well, I came in a car. Right. You know, well, when are you going? Are you still in school? Yes, I am. When are you going back? I'm going to go back tomorrow. He says, no, you're not. We're flying you back tonight. You will be in school in the morning.
There you go. That's
Can you imagine that? Oh, can mate. You imagine that?
No, I really can't. But amazing.
So from there on, whenever I went to the fight, I would just have to let them know, right? And they would arrange for me to get there to fly in. And when it was over, he didn't want me hanging out with all of those people. Mm. You go back to school,
yeah,
kind of thing. So he was very much wanting me to be a success with school.
Mm.
And that felt good.
Yeah.
And eventually I was able to invite him to the university. And on the day that he did come, the whole school shut down. Okay.
Yeah.
they didn't think I could pull it off. Well, I wasn't trying to pull anything off. I just was telling him, you know, everybody here loves you like I do, but you know, you're not real to them. They only see you on TV.
Yeah.
Why don't you come and let them meet you? And he said, okay. And he did, and from there I wound up booking him to speak at different universities,
mm.
or to just be there and talk. And he definitely could talk.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So that was good. And then I was learning about management of people and stuff like that. And eventually, I became a manager. I learned a lot about boxing. Mm. Anything that I do, I normally do 100%. So I learned a lot about boxing. And since my last name was King, Don's last name was King, and they were training a lot of fighters, I started getting men and women coming to me, asking me to manage them. Right. I don't know anything about managing, okay? But I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and at one point, I had maybe about 8 people in my stable, 4 girls and 4 men. So now I became a boxing manager, managing the careers of boxers. Wow. And really got done to bite down on having female boxers in the ring. And mm-hmm. it took off because people love to see the women box, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But eventually he went for that. And then we would have the win. His son, I think his name was Carl. He was trying to train Carl how to be a good manager. You know, teaching his son how to take over, quote unquote, his business. But a lot of that I was doing because I was good at doing stuff like that. Okay.
Amazing.
So I learned a lot from the whole process. Eventually, I became the first female boxing manager in history.
Crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I had both men and women in my stable. And all of my women were winners. I had a featherweight, a lightweight, and a light heavy, the right. women.
Wow.
And they were good and they won. And by the way, a manager's purse is very, very sweet. 33 and a third. So I was making money without even trying to make money. So when I signed somebody on to help them get about because I knew how to do stuff like that through my training from working with John Levy and the artist.
Yep.
I learned about management. So I was able to book these guys for a boxing show.
Yeah.
And when it comes time to pay, they do pay in cash after the fight and they do give it all to the manager. And then you pay your boxers.
Right.
Oh, it was sweet.
I'll bet, yes. Yeah. I imagine you lost count of what the total amount of those purses was.
Well, yes and no. I've always been a big giver, you know, so some of these guys had lots of children. Mm-hmm. So I found things to do with my money and theirs too.
Yeah. No, fantastic. Fantastic. I think that's absolutely fascinating, you know. It's boxing's one of those granddad on my mum's side, he was a champion boxer in the RAF, so I've always had that kind of interest in boxing. But when Sarah introduced me to you, and then I started to learn about you and the whole Rumble in the Jungle thing,
yeah,
I've been wanting to have this conversation for ages, and this is this is like music to my ears, and you know, fascinating. And I think the thing for me as well is that you know, you didn't stop there. You know, what you've gone on to do following mm-hmm. all of that that you've just spoken about is equally as interesting, yeah. maybe not from a sort of mm-hmm. like a publicity type perspective, mm-hmm. but you're also mm-hmm. the queen mother of a tribe out in Africa, aren't you?
Right, right. Now, how that happened is I married a king out of Ghana.
Okay.
And this is light years later after all of that happened. I married a king in Ghana. I'm the baby of 10 in my family, 4 boys, 6 girls, and then me. I'm mm-hmm. the 6th girl.
Yep.
And growing up, I saw a lot of, you know, my 6 sisters, all of them had men in their life. Mm-hmm. But I eventually saw that they would, you know, they would meet the guy. Eventually, they fall in love. They have a baby. The girl will fall out of school, drop out of school. Or she makes it to college, but then she has to drop out because she's gotten pregnant.
Right.
This is what I'm seeing as the baby with all my sisters.
Mm.
And so I decided I didn't want that. And it appeared to me that what was making it happen was a man.
Yeah.
So I decided I couldn't have any boyfriends or anything like that until I finished school.
Right.
Somehow I made that up in my mind. And I kind of did that. I just didn't want what I saw. When the guy left and she's left, she's now working, but she can't make good money because she didn't finish school.
Yeah.
So they're struggling.
Yeah, I get it.
And I realized I didn't want to live like that.
Mm.
So I decided to stay in school and finish.
Mm. Very wise.
Okay. And I did. I stayed in and I finished. And becoming the, how did I become a queen mother? I became a queen mother for 25 years of humanitarian service in Africa. Right. What are the things I would do?
Okay.
I would, when I meet African students, when I was a student at the university in the States, and they would talk about what their villages needed, what their churches needed. And I would say, oh, I can get that. So I started collecting pens and pencils and books and paper and stuff. And every time I get a box full, I would ship it. Another box, I ship it. I would just send it. That's what I was doing for many years. And not knowing that the people who were receiving it had now come to know me as the lady who sends them things. Never knew them. I don't know, 10 years or so.
Wow.
Eventually, I met this guy in the States from Ghana, and he knew about some of the stuff I had been doing. In fact, he looked me up when he came to the States. He was a dancer with the Ghana Dance Ensemble, Kwashi Amivivore. He's still living. He's still in America, living in Los Angeles, retired. And Kwashi was very impressed with the things I was doing and kept sending to the various villages. So he told the chiefs in the village about me, and they decided, well, this woman has done a lot for us. Let's make her one of us.
Right.
So that's what being in school was, to say, thank you for what you've, the humanitarian service you've done, and we'll give you the highest honor we can give you, which is to instill you. Women become instilled and they become queen mothers. Men become instilled and they become kings or chief, depending on their ranking.
Mm.
Okay. So being married to a king was another whole episode of my life. We won't go into that one now. That was something to behold as well. But the big thing on that one, is this. I was kind of frigid with men because I had seen what they had done to my sisters, leaving with babies. Yeah. I said they left them barefoot and pregnant, you know, wet sheets, all the babies, and the men is gone.
Mm.
And the women have to fend for themselves.
Mm.
So that's what I saw when the, you know, the woman got involved early with the man and he left and left her there to take care of everything. And me, I didn't want it like that.
No.
So I waited a long time before I got married.
Mm.
And so my very first marriage was to the king.
Well, not a bad first one.
My first marriage. And I was much older. I wasn't 20 or 30. Because I was running away during that time. And I didn't want no relationships because of in my head what I thought might happen. But eventually I came to learn that my life is my life. And just because my sisters may have gotten pregnant didn't mean that I would get pregnant in school. It didn't mean that. But I thought it did. It sounded like I did. It felt like it would happen, but it didn't. So I learned a lot in finally marrying. Here's my words I would say. I would say, I want a king man. And not because I was saying I wanted a king. I was simply saying that I wanted a man who loved me unconditionally.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted. Mm. And my language is skipped. I wanted a king, a man of honor, a man of valor, a man who would know how to respect and take care of a woman. That's in my head, a picture of what a king was. Yeah. So when I said, I want a king man, I was just saying, I want a good man. But the language that I used was, I want a king man. So I'm here to tell you that our language does create our world.
Right. Yeah.
I learned that.
See that.
You create your world through your words, through your language, because you call it into existence. Yep. So one of the stories I've been able to tell people is about the power of the word and how you can call things into existence.
Yeah, yeah.
Just by your own belief, by your own belief.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, I don't know. I eventually started motivational speaking and I've got several topics along the way, but I wanted to get that one in by people asking for what they want and being able to receive it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to say that I'm doing this interview with you, David, on the phone, something I've never done. My computer is acting crazy. Let's see if you see. Yeah, it's still acting crazy. I've never done a computer on the phone. It looks like I can't even get a good background behind me. So forgive me.
That's fine. Yes, it's your words and your face that we're interested in, Dash. Don't worry about the background. Okay. Listen, we've got about 5 or 10 minutes left. I know something you're very passionate about at the moment because you know what Koi Sports is about. And we're starting to work together. It's creeping forward, which isn't ideal, but we're getting there. But just talking a little bit about your work and your being an advocate of disability or differently abled communities. You know, you work within universities, don't you? Or you have done. And it's something that's a passion of yours, right?
Absolutely. And I don't know where the passion came from, but I think it came from my father. Because as a child growing up, he was like, everybody could come to our house and eat. Yeah. And we were poor. We were dirt poor. But anybody could come to our house and eat. And nobody was... No, whoever you were, nobody was thrown away, regardless of your color. If something was wrong with you, daddy brought you home, mama nursed you back to health, and she fed you, and you stayed there until you got better, then you left. So, and growing up, I can remember some disabled people in the community, but I also remember that they would come by our house because they knew that they could get food from us. Yeah. So I kind of like began to know them in that way as a child. Years passed by before I really focused on people with disability again. When I was in college, I was dating a guy who was in a wheelchair, and he was too scared to tell me that he liked me. And so one day I decided to invite him to my table at lunch, and we got to know each other. And then we started dating. And I had a car. When I would go pick him up from home, I would pick him up and put him in the front seat and take that wheelchair and put it in the trunk. And we'd go out.
Nice.
And it never was like a problem in any way. Mm. So I'm going to have to credit that to my dad for having me look at people as people.
Yep.
And not that you're different because of your disability. Mm. And then at one point I did get to meet Stevie and talk to him in great detail about his disability. And as far as he was concerned, he wasn't disabled.
Right.
He wasn't.
Mm.
He would say, let's go watch the sunset.
Right.
In Hawaii. We lived in LA. Let's go watch the sunset in Hawaii. And he'd get there, and of course, they knew he was coming. They'd have a piano. And when he got ready to play, he would play, and I would just sit there and listen. So I know all of his songs.
I'll bet. Incredible. So
I've been very blessed to meet some great people in my life, and I've been very blessed to meet some regular people also in my life. And I'm glad for all of it. And it's not over. We're doing some work now in Kenya with the disability community. We've done what we call pop-up cafes, where we get some of the restaurants to agree to hire people with disability for about 90 days to see how they can work out, because they all need jobs. And even as Kenya is now receiving its new president, today he was sworn in.
Right.
I don't know the man, but I got him. Somebody I know knows the man. So I want to meet the man, and I want to tell him the idea I have for him. And I'd like to devote at least 2 years of my life in his country working with PWDs. No. So, why do I want to meet the president and say that? Because I don't want to have to worry about a damn work permit or anything like that. Give me what I need and let me go get the job done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I will say to you that as we speak, David, there are plans on the board to open up a virtual show.
Okay.
That will be hosted and run by PWDs.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Give people opportunities. Yeah. That's all people can ever ask, no matter who you are, no matter what your health. Give people opportunities.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we are with that. We're excited. Mm. And these are people I know who were students at some point, men and women. Mm. And they're busy trying to put together their platform and find guests to bring on. And the gentleman that I met when I came on your show first time to this podcast, I told them about him, right?
Yep.
I've even sent them pictures of the, how shall I call it? The different units that the PWDs are using to be involved in sports.
Right.
Okay. I don't remember the name of it right now, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that they're like, when can we see this? I told them, hold on, you know, get your platform together. He certainly will come to speak on your platform.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, it's incredible. And I think this is what I love about what we collectively have achieved here, you know, because the power of networking is ridiculous. And the people, if you go digging, the people that you find, some incredible people out there, all of our members, and this isn't me saying anything other than the truth, are amazing people. The reason they're part of Koi Sports isn't really for themselves. You know, it's about giving back. And I think that's incredible. You know, incredible group of people. Mm-hmm. Dash, thank you.
Yes.
And thank you.
On both sides. It's powerful on both sides. They win and we win.
Yeah. A win-win. Yeah. Win-win. We love a win-win.
It's a win-win. Yeah.
Dash, thank you so much for your time tonight. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Mark, I hope you have, mate. Absolutely. Absolutely incredible. Spellbinding. I mean, if it's okay with you, we'll put it out as a podcast. And why not celebrate your life? I think it's fantastic. You know, your story, what you've achieved.